on demand.
Hi, I'm Jim Stroud. Welcome to the Recruiter's Lounge. The Recruiter's Lounge is a podcast of news, interviews, and commentary on the recruiting industry, and it was designed with you in mind. So sit back, relax, and enjoy your time in the Recruiter's Lounge.
Right now, millions of people are looking for a job on the internet. Did you know that this industry is a multi-billion dollar market? Did you know that employers pay huge upfront fees to advertise a job? No more. Work Giant is a new company with a new way of doing business, bringing job seekers and employers together like never before. Find out how you can get your share of millions of dollars worth of commissions. Register now for the opportunity of a lifetime. Work Giant, bringing the power back to the people.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. Welcome once again to the latest edition of the Recruiter's Lounge. I'm your host, Jim Stroud, and sitting in the lounge here beside me, looking as lovely as ever, is my co-host, you know her, you love her, Karen Matinen. How are you, Karen?
They love me or they love to hate me?
What? The jury is sort of out on that.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, Jim, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm very excited about our podcast today.
I am too.
You know, it's not often we get such big celebrities, you know, in. But we have a celebrity today, and her name is Penelope Trunk. How are you, Penelope?
Good. Hi.
Let me give everybody sort of like the 30,000-foot view of you, and I'll just read this quick bio, then we'll go into our conversation here. Penelope Trunk is the author of the book Brazen Careerist, The New Rules for Success. She is a career columnist at the Boston Globe and Yahoo Finance, and her syndicated column has run to more than 200 publications. Earlier, she was a software executive, and then she founded two companies. She's been through an IPO, an acquisition, and a bankruptcy. Before that, she played professional beach volleyball. Blah, blah, blah. Welcome to the lounge. Penelope Trunk, how are you?
Good. I think that blah, blah, blah was where you plug my blog.
Ah. Very good. Matter of fact, you can reach your blog at PenelopeTrunk.com.
Okay, thanks.
So, and I'll also will link to it from the blog post this podcast is hosted on as well.
Thanks.
Now, I'm going to do the first burning question here.
Okay.
Now, your career advice often goes against the status quo and is often controversial. For example, in a recent blog post on PenelopeTrunk.com, you suggest that people should make training a priority over being promoted.
Right.
I want to ask you first why you say that, and secondly, talk about the criticism you may get for saying things like that.
Yeah, well, I don't actually think it's controversial. And I was just telling Karen that I never, ever know which post is going to, like, have everyone up in arms about controversy. Because I always think I'm saying, like, something totally obvious. Like, some of the time, if I think I'm saying something really controversial, I can sit on a post for months. Like, I'm sitting on this one post about how I think Generation X has revolutionized how companies are funded. But I'm so, like, unsure of that, like, every week I think of one more interview to do to make sure I'm right, or, like, I think I, like, read one more article, and I'm, like, so careful about knowing that I'm right before I say it that by the time I say it, it feels completely obvious to me. And so I got to tell you, I'm completely blindsided that training is controversial. And in the comments section, Jason Warner pipes in from Google. You know, he's, like, the head of HR for sales at Google.
Right.
And he said that one of the biggest mistakes people make in their career is to think a promotion is what they're going for and they should really go for personal development. And I think, like, you know, among some people, maybe this is controversial because it's so much easier to let somebody else take control of your career and just tell you where to go next and promote you there. And it's so much harder to take personal responsibility. So my feeling is that every time I tell people to take personal responsibility for their career, it's controversial among the people who would like to not have adulthood be so hard. Being an adult is very, very hard. I am blown away that everyone gets up in the morning and, like, tries it again instead of killing themselves. And
wow.
I think that, like, the reason is because we're all responsible for our own lives and we never know what's going to happen. And, you know, happiness doesn't, like, blow us away every day. And so every time I talk about taking responsibility for your own life, it suddenly it's controversial. But I think, it's not controversial at all.
It's interesting because a lot of times when I hear your name mentioned among peers and sort of out there, some would accuse you of being sort of something like a career shock jock, saying things for the sake of controversy. But
right.
I get a feeling that you really mean the things you say. Is that how you would answer that criticism?
Yeah. And also I've run my career this way, which is why, which is how I started talking about it anyway. I just sort of kind of gave advice to people about how to do their career like I did.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it worked out. When I first started, like when I was playing professional volleyball, my parents were like, you are a nut job and you're wasting your education, and they would like tell everybody I'm in Los Angeles applying to law school, you know. Totally crazy.
Make mother
stuff.
Proud.
And now we look at that and everyone, like now that's the centerpiece of my whole career, you know. I've done three startups, but what does everyone want to talk about? Volleyball.
Really?
So I think, yeah. And even in job interviews, I used to have this like, you know, long grand resume, and then there'd be this little line at the bottom, professional beach volleyball, and all the guys, of course it's the guys.
I'm biting my tongue over here.
But really, they watch it, you know, every time it's on TV because it's like porn. That's all they want to talk about because it's really interesting and it's risk-taking and it's fun. And I think people know now that to be a professional athlete, mm-hmm. it's like entrepreneurial. I mean, it's really hard to do. So I feel like everyone's going to come around to everything else too. You know, like it used to be things that were controversial aren't, and keeps changing.
Well, that's a good point because one of the things that I've noticed in some of my clients is that they do like people who've been either athletes or they, you know, the jocks, or they prefer people who've been on the debate teams.
Oh, really? I was on the debate team. I'm so excited. People prefer the debate team?
And they do. They want anybody who's been in some type of an association kind of a thing, too. It's like I guess they feel that makes more of a team effort kind of a deal.
Oh, debaters are so not team players. They're such, like, egomaniacs.
Well, that explains why I'm like this, too, by the way.
That explains a lot. You explained a lot in that statement right there.
It does. Now, Penelope, okay, you and I, we've gotten an opportunity to meet with us today. I've never been, now, let's be honest, I've never been one of your biggest fans, okay? And I'm one of the, but yet you're like a train wreck. I'd always keep going back, okay, just to see what you posted
you
today.
Is that a compliment
like
in there somewhere?
But yeah, there's a compliment coming. You know, there is a compliment. I got to say something, though. I really, really respect the way you handle the controversy. I mean, you get a lot of controversy, okay?
Yeah.
And yet you handle it extremely well. And you get a lot of press from it. I mean, you can have like a 200, 300 comments just to one post. And
right, I know. Just everybody's got to say why I'm so stupid. I know. 200 people.
I don't think I would say that. I mean, I just disagree with you. It doesn't mean that I think you're stupid. I just kind of go, what was she thinking? You know, like, for example, okay, there's an example here. You say, for example, that a person should not report sexual harassment.
Yeah. See, this is, like, totally not controversial.
To me, that is so controversial.
Oh, yeah, so please explain. Explain that one to me.
It's controversial to you because you're not up on the research. And it's really upsetting to me, like, that, like, this is actually the core, like, if I could pick one thing that I could educate everyone on, it would be sexual harassment. And this is the issue. It's a legal issue. And, The law is very, very clear to companies about what they need to do to stay out of court, which makes total sense because the lawsuits are extremely expensive and kill the companies in the PR department. So the companies have pushed the courts very hard to give them a laundry list of things they should do as soon as there's a report so that they can stay out of court. And the companies do that so carefully. The HR departments are completely trained on how to get through that laundry list, and they don't veer at all. They do every single thing. The problem is nothing on that laundry list is like take care of the woman who was harassed, make sure her feelings aren't hurt, get somebody to help her when she's in HR reporting it and totally traumatized, let her go home that day, nothing like that. There's nothing about her. It's all policy, corporate, like structural stuff. So the other thing is, so there's nobody, so as soon as the woman goes into HR, it's HR against her, but she doesn't know that. She doesn't know HR is not tasked with helping her. The other thing is that the law is very, very weak on retribution. almost 100% of the time that a woman reports sexual harassment, she's fired as an act of retribution. And the reason that companies do that is because she's a live wire. Like, it makes total sense to fire her. She's a problem. She's going to be difficult. It's difficult to keep her there. And the law doesn't penalize them for firing her because the law has no teeth. It doesn't define it very well. And it's very, very hard to even get a lawyer to take a case that's retribution. That's why most of the cases you hear are women who have been in a company like maybe 15 or 20 years and have an enormous track record of performance, because that's the only way you can win a retribution case. So what happens is the women go in and report sexual harassment and they get fired. And so, I mean, in every woman, 46% of high school kids who are high school women who are taking summer jobs get harassed. That's like the percentage of women that are getting harassed every day, and it just keeps going. 90% of knowledge workers have experienced some form of harassment, women. So if every woman reported sexual harassment, every woman's career would be on the rocks. And on top of that, most harassment is not that bad. Most harassment is the guy being like, you know, you're at a hotel, you're traveling with him, you're at a hotel, you each have your own room, you eat dinner together, you guys drink, and then he says, I've never felt like this about anyone, I'm so attracted to you, I'm beside myself, I can't believe this is happening, this has never happened, and you can just be like, you know what, I'm going to bed, good night. It's fine, you know, that's, yes, it's inappropriate. If he does it three times, it's harassment, but it's not going to kill you. You can, you know, most women can take care of it. And the other thing is, all the harassment, like hoopla about how you have to report it, blah, 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 is because people think that women and men are not equal at work. In fact, women are making more than men in the major cities before they have kids. And the inequality comes when women have kids, because women make the choices to downshift their career. So there's not generally a differential in power in the workplace. And so women are much more empowered to just take care of the, like, low-grade harassment themselves. So, you know, if somebody's, like, got a gun to your head and his pants are pulled down, that's a police action. That's not an HR action. But if he's just like, oh, I wish my pants were pulled down, you can just be like, you know what, shut up.
I think I'm hearing some of the controversy people are talking about. Just for the clarity's sake on my end, and your definition of sexual harassment is more of, again, the feeling of I guess you think harmless flirtation,
casual comment. Well, there's a very clear legal definition of harassment. You have to say one time to the guy, I don't like what you're doing. If you don't say that, you cannot call it harassment.
Okay,
this is a legal definition. This is a legal discussion.
Okay.
Are you legally protected from retribution? No. Is the company legally going to be your adversary as soon as you report? Yes. Are you legally bound to tell the guy definitively what you don't like that he's doing and he shouldn't do it again? Yes. You cannot even report it until you've told him that you don't like it. And he has to do it again. You guys will do it again.
Actually, okay, I'd like to interject here. This is my area of expertise, and this is one of the reasons I did bring this up, because this is a very conflicting to me, okay?
Yeah.
Actually, that's not true. You don't have to report it to you don't have to tell that person no. You can actually report it to HR, and HR can report it to tell the individual, hey, she's uncomfortable, she was intimidated, she didn't want to tell you. Okay?
Why would a woman ever do that?
Because the problem is, and it's just like with a person who's being abused or beat up, okay?
Those women are not being abused and beat up.
It's the same type of it gives you the same type of hostile, intimidating, or
offensive
feeling.
No, this is
feeling.
Why. Because a woman who's being abused and beaten up is in a relationship that she's staying in, and she's fucked up. A woman who's in a company, a woman who's in a company and a guy is hitting on her, she's not being abused. She's perfectly capable of saying, yo, will you stop doing that? I don't
actually
like it.
For some women, it's an intimidation factor, because, for example, that may be their boss. Or it may be somebody who's
I've had my boss do it, and this was what happens. And I think every woman knows
this. But you must remember, Penelope,
as soon as your boss does it and you say no, first of all, you've got power over him. And second of all, you know he wants to hang out with you, and you get more from him.
Okay, well,
So you start pimping him in that case?
Well, it's just everybody likes to be around people they like, right? So if there's a great... if there's a great client and you want to be on that great client for your resume, you can say to your boss, hey, you know what, I'll travel with you, bring me to this great client. And you're not saying you'll have sex with him. You'll say he gets to hang out with you. He's
I do
like
want to interject.
All right, hold on, Karen. Hold on, Karen. Let me do a step by step thing here. Okay, just so I make sure I'm understanding everything, because I know some people maybe have their jaws dropped right now.
Yeah.
All right, Sam and the.
This is so okay. This is what happens. I go talk. This is a great example. I talk to the cream of the crop college girls who are in investment banking internships for the summer.
Yeah.
So they get all these like great speakers because the investment banks want to keep them, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then there's also like 20 HR people who are there to like, you know, make sure that all these girls are having a great time and learning a lot and will stick, you know, go to Goldman when they're done. So that's what the room is. It's like 50 top performing college girls and 20 HR people from top investment banks. So I do my sexual harassment spiel.
Yeah.
All the girls are like, yeah, I totally agree. I'm harassed all the time, and I don't care. All the HR people are like, we fought so hard for feminism. We fought so hard for rights in the workplace. And like, no one cares. It's over.
Excuse me.
It's a new game.
I got to stop here, and I really do want to interject here, because this is important information. I do want to let women know what's the real truth here. First off, there is a whistleblower act that does protect women. Number two, in fact, so much so that women, they can't get fired for doing a claim. You can't. You
it's
really
illegal,
can't.
But it's impossible
and it
to
won't
prove.
Know. Actually,
it's
number
impossible
three,
to prove.
Hold on, Penelope, let me finish here, please.
Yeah.
Number three, you don't hear about many of the big lawsuits because most companies, like you said, don't want to go to lawsuits, so they do mediation. 89% to 95% of loss of cases are handled by EEOC through mediation.
Right, and then the women's careers are shot to hell.
That's not when they're shot, because actually that's when they're protected. The women will get
to be protected. Who wants to go through their career being protected? I'd rather go through my career being part of the boys club.
But see,
much
Penelope,
more empowering.
Penelope, out of respect for women who are in that situation, I mean, maybe you are comfortable with it, but there are a lot of women who may not feel comfortable with it.
Well, they need
to
go
them.
To therapy and get comfortable defending themselves in normal everyday life where men are attracted to women. Men are attracted to women. You don't need a company to defend you against that.
Actually, you don't need a company to defend you, but you don't have to have a company also. Okay, you and I, we got into an agreement on actually for the first time on a topic, and I agreed with, and you and I agreed on something where you said.
What was that?
I want to know this at this point. What is it you guys agree on?
Yeah, it was actually, and it kind of relates to this, where you don't have to make people uncomfortable. It's like you should just accept people for who they are. And respect what they believe.
Are you kidding me? This is the only point we agree on.
This is the only one we've ever agreed on.
Thank God we agreed on that. Like, what if we didn't? What if we were arguing about should you respect people?
I mean, the thing is, because if that's the thing, I'm going to hear too. Just because you may not agree with somebody who says, I don't want to be working in a hostile environment, or what they perceive
if
as
they don't
want
to be working in a hostile environment, there's 2% unemployment for college grads, and it's lower for women. They should just go get another job.
Okay, are you looking at long-term unemployment, or are you just looking at
I'm looking at, I don't know, Challenger and Gray just gave me that.
Well, yeah, but see,
I'm quoting them. I'm quoting John Challenger.
2%. Okay, well, that doesn't mean that may consider long-term unemployment. See,
whatever, you know what? It's just totally pathetic that women don't feel like they can take care of themselves in the workplace. You do not need HR to help you.
We don't. We can't. That's the reason. Okay, let's look at EEOC and civil rights. If it
don't want to, because civil rights, it's different. We don't need civil rights for women who are making more than men, who are running the men's lives at home, who have been dealing with successfully with men hitting on them since they were 12. It's not civil rights. The women are fine.
I have to say that I enjoy a great cat fight. It's really nice. I don't know if it's the guy saying, you know, first we have volleyball. We have professional volleyball in here.
And
then we got the cat fight.
Let's have a high five on this one, because you and I will definitely agree to disagree. Because I do believe that we have to protect. If it wasn't for us going out there to protect and fight for our rights, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Agreed, but we can be over it. It's like, okay.
Next time, we're going to bring in some mud or Jell-O. And we're going to revisit this topic. Personally preferring Jell-O, but that's just me.
You know what, Matt? Okay, here, let me tell you something. That is sexist and demeaning.
It certainly
because
is.
Because if there were two guys fighting, you wouldn't turn it into
definitely not.
We agree on something again.
Yeah.
Good point.
You know what? That's the problem with
that
the
workplace.
Yes, it is.
That men feel like they can just like toss out those little one-liners. That's the damage. You know
and
what?
And do you notice how I bring
up against the wall and kissed me? That
something else.
Well, you notice how smoothly I was able to get you guys to stop arguing and focus on me.
But you know what?
In my
I
own
want
defense.
To tell you something. Penelope, we agreed on something else again. Oh, my goodness.
See,
okay.
Look at see, if nothing else, y'all can agree to bash a guy.
Okay, no, yeah, let her go. Now, I want to ask you something else, too, Jim.
Mm.
Recently, Penelope, too, I've been noticing a lot of people tend to, like groupies, they tend to ride on your shirt tails. They don't mention your name a lot just to kind of, like, get hits. Or...
That's so awesome for my technorati rank. Isn't it? How many times will you guys be linking to me?
So out of curiosity, how do you handle the ones that actually try to really worm their way into you?
Well, I don't have that. What would they
I've
be
been
doing?
Noticing that a lot recently.
What do you mean? What would they be doing?
Oh, well, like,
can they hear some things that I've suggested that only one person has done? I've suggested people send flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Only one person.
Oh. I got to know who. Who is that?
You know what? This is what he did. It was Dad. So I said, people should send me flowers because I really like it, and I posted my street address.
Uh-huh.
And
what? Really? Okay.
Yeah, that's it. What, for flowers? Sure. Do you guys want it here? 1121 Elizabeth, Madison, Wisconsin,
okay,
53703.
Now I'm beeping all of this in editing.
Also, please, I don't like baby's breath. It's not a flower. Don't send it. So anyway,
okay, she's great.
I posted it, and then this is the only guy who sent flowers. A guy who I had already told 3 times his book totally sucks, and I am not writing about it at all, and he should never contact me again. He sent me flowers.
Wow.
Yeah.
As a way to sway you over to his cause, or
yeah,
just
yeah. Yeah, so that's the only time. Otherwise, I see nobody brown-nosing to me, but I would like it. And I always encourage people to do it, but nobody does it. I mean, Ryan, those guys that work with me, that you know, they are so hard on me. If they could just do 1 minute of brown-nosing, I'd be happy.
Wow.
Yeah. What about you guys? Could you guys do some brown-nosing?
Could we do some brown-nosing?
Right? You mentioned my URL when I demanded it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll do the brown-nosing. You know, you are the prettiest woman I've seen today. And I'm not just saying that because we're on the phone.
We're on the phone and the phone right
now. I'm hurt now.
Well, I already know it's in the context of your Jell-O recipe. It's not even that good.
No. Jim, what about Ryan and Ryan? You were going to ask her about that.
I have to say more. Ryan and Ryan, what is that about?
What is it about?
I didn't.
Well, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, because you threw me when you said that. Cause I know what you're talking
generation
about.
Generation Y, and you know, with Ryan and Ryan. Tell us a little bit about that, the new business you're forming.
Oh,
that's great. What a great opportunity. My new business is it's a network of Generation Y bloggers who are blogging about career issues because. This is what I noticed, that every time I write about a young blogger on my blog, the media's all over them. It's so like, you know, I write about Rebecca Thorman, Rebecca Thorman's in the Wall Street Journal. I write about Ryan, Ryan's at CBS. You know, it's like, so then I thought, oh, the media has no way to know how to get to Generation Y bloggers. And then I realized if the media doesn't, probably HR departments don't either. So if we aggregate all the... all the young people who are blogging about careers, then you have people segmented by their specialty and their communities come with them. And so then everybody's nice and organized by careers, and we're all, then I can take all my traffic and, like, help them and kind of amplify Generation Y's voice online. And it makes me feel like I'm doing something, like, good with my career, you know? Like, I have all this traffic. What am I doing? I can't keep, like, asking for flowers and anyway, no one's sending it, so...
So now your business is more or less spreading the love to other bloggers.
Yeah, yeah, and like in creating a community, and I learned so, so much from them, and I love that part.
Now, your business model, I'm curious, your business model, is that sort of like what Jason Calcanis did with Weblogs, Inc.?
I don't know.
Okay.
Are you making me sound dumb about
No, not at all.
No, really, I'm just kidding. What did he do? Tell me.
Okay, what he did was he created a blog network. And he had so many writers, and each writer wrote about a particular topic, and he split the revenue with each writer as revenue came in based on that particular topic. Then he sold it to AOL, I think, for like $4 million or something like that.
Oh, yeah. We're selling ours for $4 million. Yeah, that's us.
That's what she, yeah, why
you heard it first.
Yeah, we're not paying them. We're, it's more community. I mean, I think Jason Calcanis is about Jason Calcanis, right? I mean, I know about him.
Okay.
not that I'm not about me, but it's about community.
Sure.
I mean, I think if you're a blogger, you have to love community.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I make technorati jokes and everything, but I love linking. I love linking. I love the conversation. I don't even mind that everybody on Yahoo hates me. I just love to talk about it.
Now, how does Yahoo feel about that?
Everyone's talking.
How does Yahoo feel about that? If people hate you on Yahoo and you're still there, I mean, does Yahoo love it? Because hits are hits. Doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, I mean, they love traffic. They like traffic. But, you know, not everyone hates me. I think we all know that the people who are like, you know, the most intelligent genre of people is not necessarily commenting. I think we know that.
Right.
Every time I read a post and don't comment, I think that, right?
Oh, that's ouch.
The intelligent majority, silent majority.
No, that's an ouch there because I'm a commenter. I'm not a blogger.
Well, that's interesting because I tell people all the time that that blogging is such a huge commitment and you can get just as much out of commenting.
Yeah,
like
that's exactly
form the
true.
Exact same kind of relationships.
Okay, here we agree again.
Oh,
this is number three. All right. Okay, so we actually can count them now, right? So
this is historical precedent in the making.
I mean, Jim is always telling me blog. I've had so many people say, why don't you get a blog? And I'm like, I don't want a blog. I just want to comment. And they're like, but your comments are as long as a blog. And I'm like, yeah. It's like how I speak, long-winded.
Well, you know, you should go read Chris Yeh's blog. I'm going to plug him now. Yeh is Y-E-H.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I noticed that he does. He's not a huge blogger. He's a really good thinker, though, like you, even though you disagree with me. Chris does not disagree with me as much as you do.
Mm-hmm.
But you're both really good thinkers. And Chris, a lot of times, will write a super intelligent comment. And then I go over to his blog, and he just, like, puts it on his blog, too. So his blog's like kind of dumping ground for all his really intelligent comments.
That's not a bad idea, I guess.
Yeah, and he's got a really cool audience. Like the people who read his blog are super smart.
Well, like kind of you do a lot of that with Jim's the podcast, I guess. Like this is where my venting is. This is my venting and dumping ground.
Well, I'm really happy to be a part of it, Karen.
You're so welcome. Hey, by the way, thank you for the compliment, though. I appreciate that. So we agreed on the four things then. I am smart.
But when you started your whole career, I guess writing career, if I read your mm-hmm. bio correctly, started when you answered an open call from Fortune magazine.
Yeah.
To write about your life, and the piece that won you the gig was that you talked about your brother's stupid internet ideas and your boss's sex appeal. Tell me, I'm just so curious what you said about those two.
Well, my boss was. I always have worked for really hot bosses.
Is this why sexual harassment is not a problem for you?
I've always been able to use it in my favor. In fact, the most unappealing boss is the one who was the most harassing. But in general, I think there's always like, if you're attracted to the person you work with, there's like low-grade, tension because you want to have sex with each other, but you don't. I mean, in general, people don't.
Right.
And you work better because you're like more in tune with the person if you're attracted to them. So we worked really, really well together. And I never had sex with him, although I thought about it a lot. and then he did some other, like, really interesting things that I wrote about. Like, he was way better at networking than I was. He was, like, the networking god. I was kind of the operations person of
mm-hmm.
our startup, and he was the networking guy. And so we'd go to these networking events, and I'd just leave because I didn't know what to do. I was like, okay, fine, tell me what to do, and I'll go do it. And he's like, well, the first thing you should do is sit next to people who are better looking than you are because they make you look better, and then you more people talk to you. I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. He's like, no, you come sit with me because you're so much younger and you're good looking and you make me look good. There's a bunch of stuff like that. He was a good guy, though.
Maybe I should try that.
Yeah, and what if I had reported him to the EEOC, you know? I mean, I could have, whatever.
Oh, you enjoyed it. It wasn't harassment then.
Right. Well, it wasn't harassment because I could hold my own. I mean, whatever. So he tells me I'm good looking, whatever. This is an interesting thing about him. He had this, like, amazing bachelor pad that sometimes we would go, like, you know, on the weekend we would work there. And he had, it had, like, no walls. So there was no wall for the bathroom. That was a little awkward. I'll try to pee before I went there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
One thing we haven't done in all this is...
You're like, how'd she get that job? That was not interesting. How'd she get that job?
One thing we hadn't done yet that's on my to-do list here is to plug your new book, The Brazen Careerist, The New Rules for Success. Wow.
Yeah, that was good. Thank you.
What inspired you to write that?
How did you go from IT into the career field?
Yeah, then you plug your book.
How did I move from IT? Oh, like software industry?
Mm-hmm. Technology.
Well, I was doing my startups, and I was at a startup in New York. I went to New York, and I was at the bottom of the World Trade Center when it fell.
Wow.
And so I went through that whole thing where you think you're going to die. I thought I was going to die, and it was very traumatic. Very bad. And so I went back to, you know, it took me, I went to the hospital, it took me like weeks to even get back to my apartment in Brooklyn. But I got back and that was it. I wasn't leaving. I like only left to go to my trauma group. And so I had this column and my editor was like, yo, you can't keep writing about yourself because you're doing nothing. You got to start writing something else. And so I started giving advice because I didn't know what else to do in my column. And then my column really took off. Like, it turned out people wanted advice about how to do a career like mine more than they wanted to hear my life story. Not that I don't keep telling my life story, whatever, but people liked the advice better. So I just started writing advice, and it actually saved me because I really needed to be able to earn money from my house. And so it allowed me to earn a lot more money.
So, we got a little serious there, too, but, I mean, going back to September 11, I'm sorry. My heart goes out to you on that one, by the way.
Thanks.
Definitely.
I know it's a bad arc for your interview that we did that part at the
end. No, not at all.
No, it isn't. Because, I mean, that's reality, and, wow, you know, that must have been very traumatic. I know we watched on TV. It's still traumatic to watch it. How does it feel when you watch, going to that, how does it feel when you watch it on TV today?
Oh, I don't watch it on TV.
You don't?
I'm very, very careful. Even you, like, saying, watching it on TV, I, like, get all upset. I get, like, a little, not upset, but, you know, I would never watch it on TV. But this is the thing about that experience, is that mostly that experience is about careers, right? Because you go to the trauma group, and everyone's basically, you're divided. The trauma groups were all divided by how bad things were for you that day. So, like, my trauma group was, can I just talk about this now? Are we doing this in the interview? Because I'm okay.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, yeah, I appreciate that.
Okay, so my trauma group was it was mostly people who were hit by jumpers. Like, people were jumping, the body parts, like, flew everywhere. So I'm sitting in a room with mostly people like that. And nobody could go back. Our common thing was that nobody could go back to work because of the flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And so we all had to cope with career assessment and career change. And what I realized in the group, like going week after week, is that so much of our stability and personal strength comes from going, waking up every day and contributing to something bigger than us and, like, being a part of something and getting social acknowledgement from it in the form of money. And, like, even though the Red Cross would support most of us for a while, it felt so much more empowering to just figure out our next job and figure out our next career and kind of troubleshoot the whole career change thing. And it just made me love giving career advice. It made me understand how important it is and how, like, a career can't make you happy and, like, you know, make your sex life gold, but a career can, like, save you when you're down. And not just for things like the World Trade Center. And it just made me think, this is so important. I'm so lucky to be able to do this for my life.
I got goosebumps. I'm sorry. I really did. I think that was really quite impassioned. And it's true for everyone, what you're saying. And I really appreciate you taking the time out to tell us about this.
It seemed like you really hit your passion for what you do. I mean, a lot of people sort of become worker bees and just, you know, punch in and punch out and don't really enjoy what they do or enjoy life because of it. But it seems like you're very fortunate in that you found your passion and love and you're doing it every day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have other things going wrong, don't get me wrong, but the career thing's going really well.
You know, well, the thing is with Conversations with God, there's a book called Conversations with God, and in it, there's a statement that he says, you know, people actually just live in life or you can actually be living in life.
Yeah.
And I think with what you're doing is the same thing with regards to work. You can either, you know, go to work or you could have fun working. you know, with
yeah.
it. And I really think that that's a good point.
Do you use any of this, any of your experiences from that time in your life in your book, The Brazen Careerist?
From 9/11?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
What's the inspiration for your new book?
Oh, I don't know. Can you cut this part?
Sure, I will.
No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to cut it. I don't know what my new book is.
It's okay.
One third of the advance.
No, it's okay.
I don't know.
Maybe it's this part here. Maybe it will be about 9/11.
All listeners should submit ideas for my next book.
There you go.
And titles also. And actually, ghostwriting offers. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, the controversy of Penelope Trunk. A question, too. Why did you change your name to Penelope Trunk?
I didn't. Did you not read my post? It's one of the most popular posts on the blog is how I got my name.
Uh-huh.
This will be the abridged story. It's a very long story. I have four names. This is my fourth name, but
okay.
I'll just give you my editor... for when I got that column writing about my boss's sex appeal that you guys didn't laugh at, by the way. That was funny. they're like, well, you can't – I mean, I couldn't write about my work life from my real name because I was dissing everyone I worked with. So they're like – they gave me the name Penelope Trunk. I was like, oh, well, I already have a pen name. They're like – we don't care. When you're Dominic Dunn, you can tell Time Warner what your pen name is. Right now, Time Warner tells you what your pen name is. So I got the name Penelope Trunk, and I was writing anonymously for a while, but then I had no idea that the column was really big. I had no idea that my whole office was subscribing to my column. So I dissed my company picnic, and I dissed it in very specific ways to the point where HR had to come to me and be like, you hurt our feelings.
Probably
better than that. So then I was kind of outed, and I wrote, like, out as Penelope Trunk. And then people knew me better as Penelope Trunk than my other names, and it just got too messy. So when I went to Madison, I just started using the name Penelope Trunk. And my husband was like, you are a nutcase. I signed my son up for school and just gave my Penelope name. My husband was like, we're going to get kicked out of this town. Our kids are going to, people won't think you're crazy. But you know what? It was so easy. And now when my husband's like, you know, uses my other name, no one even knows who he's talking about. So he has to call me Penelope too. It all worked out really well.
Have you changed it legally yet?
No. But it doesn't matter. It only matters when you get a plane ticket. Otherwise, it doesn't matter.
That's true.
Well, this is why every superhero needs a secret identity. Penelope Trunk, it has been truly a pleasure to have you here in Curtis Lounge. It's definitely one of my more favorite episodes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. This has been very fun. You guys are really lively.
That we are.
Everyone wants to criticize me, but no one does it as blatantly as you in an interview, and I really appreciate it.
That's why I respect you.
I'm
serious, and that's why I respect you. I mean, even and you knew when I emailed you and I asked you to go ahead, I didn't know if you were going to say yes. Okay, because I know you knew that I was one of your, you know, worst criticizers out there. Okay.
Oh yeah, I loved that you contacted me.
I think it was so cool when you said yes, and I said, okay, Jim, you know, you need to go ahead and make sure you schedule the time for me because I'm more flexible than he is because he, you know, he has a full time job, so he has to schedule around his job, and I'm more, and I have a job, but I work from home, right?
Uh-huh.
So when you said yes, I really was respectful of you. I mean, you know, we disagree. Big deal. I mean, that's cool. But I like the way that you handle that. That is so cool.
Oh, good. Thanks. You know, a lot of my readers disagree with me, and I love them for that. Like, how boring would it be if everyone thought I was right? So boring.
Right on.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish more people would have that kind of attitude, you know? Because, I mean, everybody disagrees with me.
The woman we love to hate.
Well, you know, it's the Dixie Chicks of the recruiting role, right? Right, Jim? We say that all the time.
Well, thanks again, Penelope Trunk, for being in Recruiter's Lounge.
Okay, thanks.
Well, that's it for this show. You've been a wonderful audience. If you like what you heard, love what you heard, or just plain hate what you just heard, let me know. Your feedback matters. You can reach me through my website at jimstroud.com/podcast. That's JIMSTROUD.com/podcast. Podcast. So until next time, I'm Jim Stroud, and you're not.
Radio, Radio, Radio Talent Zoo.
Innovative audio on demand.